The top topics, the headiest headlines, the debatiest debate. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Annis alongside Ryan Dixon and Mike Johnson. Lots to get to this weekend in sports. We talked about the Raptors, streaking Raptors, and how little credit they get for being second place in the Eastern Conference and all the big wins they've had this season and the incredible tear DeMar DeRozan's on. Also, it is championship weekend in the NFL, and the Blue Jays, they're around. Winter tour continuing, and a couple of them speaking out, including Aaron Sanchez, who wants to be a starter in 2016. But we start because we got a couple of puckheads in the room. Let's start with a little hockey, shall we, gents? And things getting a little weird now with the Jonathan Drouin saga and the Tampa Bay Lightning. So we know the guy's a top three pick in the NHL, and certainly there's a whole bunch of potential there. Why not? He's gotten more than a little taste of the NHL, though. I guess let's just start with the optics here, Ryan, because it doesn't look good, right? And a lot has been written on this being kind of an unprecedented case, and Elliot Friedman talking about maybe some of these potential suitors for Jonathan Drouin being scared off by the whole thing. It doesn't look good for... Is he getting bad advice?
I don't know about that. I do get the sense that it is coming from him, and who knows what kind of private conversations his agent Alan Walsh has had with him. For all we know, for the last 12 months, Walsh has been telling him, you know, hang in there, buddy. I've seen other people go through this. You know,
seems unlikely.
Well, we'll see. But I definitely think this move, the way they've kind of tried to strong arm Tampa, does not play well in NHL circles. We've seen Bob Murray, the GM of the Ducks, one of the many, many, many teams said to have interest in Drouin, kind of raise his eyebrows and say, entry-level guys demanding right. trades now. So I don't think that it reflects really well on him. That said, we could still sit here and rhyme off half the teams in the league when compiling the list of clubs who wouldn't mind putting this guy in their lineup, right? So...
To me, it's confusing, Mike. I don't know how you see it, but I look at it as a guy. Yeah, sure, he could be a thing, right? You don't become a top three pick for no reason. And he's not old, and he hasn't had a real long run, but he's had a bit of a taste in the NHL and has not performed. If you're a contender, which it seems like there's, when you see the list of the teams that have kind of been rumored to be in on him, and why would you? If you're the Lightning, you're expecting something in return as well. If you're a contender, how confident would you feel in throwing Jonathan Drouin into your lineup right away, trying to win a Stanley Cup?
Well, I don't know that he helps your team necessarily this season. You know, it's not, he's not going to be a guy you add if you're a contending team looking for that piece, that one piece to put you over the top for a playoff run. It's good. You have to look at adding a guy like Drouin as a long-term play. You know, because
so then why would the St. Louis Blues be interested?
Well, it's funny. Elliot Friedman was on an Edmonton radio show Friday, and he said teams like the St. Louis Blues were really heavy on. They were one of the favorites to make a strong push for him, and they've taken, you know, they've backed off a bit. And the Anaheim Ducks, another team that would be a good fit for him, that have defensemen to move the type of defenseman Tampa would want for a guy like Drouin, they've backed off as well. You know, it's not that they're not still interested in some way, but it's that they're backing off, and it's got to be, at least part of it has to do with the fact that it's out in public now. If this was all happening behind closed doors,
right,
teams would certain teams would be more interested. It's like, okay, this guy's not happy, but at least he's not making a big deal of it.
Now he's not showing up for games, or not you know,
it's not a good look for prospective teams.
You know what, I know it's an imperfect comparison, but already this year we've seen Ryan Johansson dealt a guy who had his share of question marks dogging him around Columbus. Yeah. And not just this year, right? Before John Tortorella, contentious contract negotiations. We all know how the Tyler Seguin saga played out. Now, these are guys who had a legit body of work in the NHL, which Drouin doesn't. But in terms of overlooking perceived problems, clearly NHL teams are only too happy to do that. And, you know, in relative terms, I think they will do the same with Drouin.
What if we take out the whole demanding of a trade thing and actually just look at not wanting to play in the AHL because he doesn't want to be hurt, because he doesn't want to hurt his chances of being traded? Is that so illegitimate?
I don't
concern?
Mind that. Yeah, I don't mind. Like, it sounds from the Drouin camp, you're hearing Tampa basically said, go play and show you're healthy. And I think he played seven games, I think, something like that. So, again, we're going to use the word optics a lot here. Probably they're not great, but if he was told or had the sense that a trade was imminent, then you could see him pulling himself from the lineup. But you know, it's definitely a bit of a ugly situation.
If there's so many, I don't know the numbers, but it's a ridiculously high percentage of NHLers that have played a certain number of games in the AHL. And Jonathan Drouin hasn't played too many AHL games.
No.
He's played way more NHL games than he has AHL games. And it comes down to simply right now, Steve Yzerman doesn't think he's NHL ready.
Well, and they had a good team. They went to the Stanley Cup final, right? I mean, you can throw some of this at John Cooper if you want to say, why didn't he play more? Well, why did he play Steven Stamkos less than four other forwards last year? Well, because he thought he was doing what he had to do to give his team the best chance to win, and he was right.
The triplets were ridiculous.
They went to the Stanley Cup final and lost 4 one-goal games to the best team in the NHL. So are you really going to take that much issue with what Tampa's done?
It also has to do with the perception that he's a third overall pick. And there's a lot of pressure that comes behind that. And if you look at a guy like Max Domi, he spent an extra year in junior. He spent an extra year developing.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's finally bursting into the NHL and having a really good rookie campaign. Jonathan Drouin was rushed into the NHL a bit earlier than that. And I think it comes down to he's not a fully formed NHL player yet.
Right.
Like, he has the potential. He's a third overall pick. If he can develop into a guy, even like an Alex Galchenyuk, another third overall pick, who's not this superstar forward yet, but he's a good forward. He's a top six forward. And if Drouin can develop into a guy with a similar skill set, in the grand scheme of his career, I don't think this is going to define him necessarily. But he has to take the steps, whether it be, you know, putting his ego in check spending a good stretch of games in the minors. Because his first game on this conditioning stint that they sent him down for, he scored two great goals, but he was also in the following games, he was a minus player. Like, he didn't put up too many more points. I think he only has 3 points in his 7 games this year. Like, he's not, he has flashes of brilliant offensive play, but he's not a well-rounded NHL caliber player.
Well, and that's the problem. If you're going to acquire Jonathan Drouin as a project, you can't send him to the AHL. We've established that, right? Like, he's not going to say, oh, you know what? St. Louis Blues, send me to your AHL affiliate. He wants to play in the NHL, and he wants to play right now.
I think you have that. It comes with that understanding if you're trading for him that he expects to be in the lineup the next day. And that's why teams are going to trade for him, whether it is sort of a middleweight that's looking to build long term, or whether it is a team like St. Louis that has done everything and can't get over the hump and you know, hopes that it is sort of plug and play with him. Okay, new situation, put you with a new set of guys, and hopefully we'll see that talent surface. But who's to say if that is actually how it would play out with him?
One more before we move on from the Drouin thing. It's not the first time that Steve Yzerman has had kind of a public falling out with one of his players. Marty St. Louis as well asked to be traded. Now, that's, I would assume, a totally different scenario when we're talking about picking Olympic teams and all that went on behind the scenes there. But is there a concern that maybe, I mean, this is the second player that this is sort of happened with, requesting a trade out of Tampa?
I look at this more as circumstance, and I look back at the whole Tampa narrative, and it's pretty crazy, right? I mean, they have, in the same year that Steven Stamkos breaks his leg. The team keeps fighting. St. Louis, the longtime face of the franchise, demands a trade to one team. Right. Says, trade me to the Rangers. Yeah. They pull it off. They make the playoffs that year and lose. Come back the next year, make the Stanley Cup final. As I said, lose four close games to Chicago. Like, if you go back to last June when they just lost to the Blackhawks, disappointing as that was, when you look at the mix of youth and skill on that team, like, Yzerman and Cooper must have had a beer together and been like, you know what, we're going to win it one of these years. And now here we are. Who knows what's happening with Steven Stamkos, this whole Drouin situation. And until about 6 weeks ago, the team wasn't doing anything. But now you look down and realize they actually might win the division through all this. So, well, it's just been a crazy series of events in Tampa. Like, if this was happening in, God forbid, Toronto, but even, New York, Chicago, wherever, you'd be like, this is the craziest set of circumstances around a franchise you could imagine.
Oh, it was perfect that his AHL affiliate was in Toronto. They were at Rika. Oh,
yeah, of course. He skipped
30
he had
disappointed
to skip
scouts, right?
The Marlies game of all games. It is an interesting trend, though, with Yzerman in this last couple years, and they're high-profile players. Marty St. Louis, a potential future Hall of Famer. Steve Stamkos, franchise player. Jonathan Drouin, super high draft pick. And it's interesting to see how Yzerman is handling all this. Like, he's kind of digging his heels in. And saying when he was part of the Team Canada selection committee, he didn't put Marty St. Louis on the team because either it was Mike Babcock or the coaching staff didn't feel like he fit in with the roster they had envisioned. And he, Yzerman could have easily said, guys, let's come on. Marty, he's having a good year.
You're going to make my life
you're
a lot
make
easier.
Exactly.
Totally.
Put him as the 13th forward. It's not a big deal. But that's not where he went. He's like, Marty, you're not right for the team right now. It all worked out eventually, not for Stamkos, obviously. But, it's interesting how Yzerman has been handling himself, and that's just kind of the way he is. I wonder, he's probably learned that from growing up under guys like Scotty Bowman, who wouldn't take,
Pulled him aside and said, this is how it's going to be.
Yeah, right. You got to act this way or you're gone that type
or
of
you're
attitude.
Gonna be a Nordique.
Exactly. Nobody wants that, right?
No, they don't. Guys. You mentioned that yes, they are very much alive in the race for top spot in the Atlantic Division, just 3 points back of the Florida Panthers. The Lightning have won 7 straight, and wasn't that long ago we were talking about the Montreal Canadiens running away with that division. The start was ridiculous, and we all talked about how this was no longer a one-man team. Carey Price was the MVP of the league a year ago, and yes, he was outstanding, and much of that team's success in 2014-2015 was based on great goaltending. It wasn't the case, though, early this season. They had good underlying numbers, but then they lose Carey Price, and wouldn't you know it, the bottom does fall out again. Ryan, does it make any sense? Make sense of it, because I know you follow the Habs pretty closely, obviously.
It's tough. I do not think, as Mark Bergevin said in his press conference yesterday or the day before, in their heart of hearts, they had to know that things weren't going to be quite as rosy if Price went out of the lineup for an extended stretch. This team wins a game once every 2 weeks at this point, going back to December. It's pretty crazy because, as you said, it's been such a polarizing or such an extreme experience because early on, they weren't just scoring goals. Like, they were the best team in the NHL. They had the best goal differential. And, we're still talking about a relatively small sample size, but we're also talking about, 10, 15 games into the season, getting toward a quarter chunk. But, the thing with Montreal, which incidentally still has good underlying numbers, if you want to keep track of that sort of thing or put any stock in that, I honestly think with this team, you can kind of throw the numbers out the window, and even setting aside the price issue, just specifically look at Montreal's top 6 forwards, the guys who play on those first 2 lines, and just ask yourself, do they have enough horses? Do they have enough talent? And the answer is no way. The only guy they have in the lineup who was born to play on a first line in the NHL is Max Pacioretty. Everyone else, is kind of faking it right now. Yes, you can put Brendan Gallagher on your first line, and he's going to be great wherever you put him. But he's not a true, you know, front line 75-point guy. Maybe Alex Galchenyuk will yet develop into that. But he's not yet there. Thomas Blachanis has spent his whole career being a guy who would be a great number two, but is a bit of a misfit at number one. So I just, you know, I thought the last 2 years coming off making the East Final, losing to the Rangers, and then losing in the second round to Tampa Bay last year, you just thought, you know what, there's just not enough of a push up front. And I thought going into the summer, Marc Bergevin really needed to push hard to see if he could bring in a guy who could be a difference maker. Put it this way, if Phil Kessel didn't play for their blood rival, if he was a guy who wanted out of Arizona, I would have said the Canadians need to get in there and get in there hard on someone like that. You know, they tried. It sounds like they came close with Justin Williams, but he chose the Capitals. You know, I think they kicked the tires pretty hard on a few other guys, but they ended up rolling the dice on Zach Cassian and Alex Semin, and quite clearly, that couldn't have gone anywhere. So here we are, you know?
That sounds really bad when you just say it in a sentence
like
that.
In one sentence, yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Yeah. It'll look really bad if Cassian ends up being a contributor for Edmonton, but that's another story.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I really don't know exactly. I think the real question with Montreal is where are they at when Price does come back? What is the true potential of this team? That's really what I think is most interesting.
When I look at the Canadiens, the last few years, when Price is healthy, but putting goaltending aside, they've been a team that, for me, they could roll three and four lines throughout a game. They didn't have to rely on one line to score the bulk of their goals like a team like Dallas or Washington does. You know, they're a team that had relatively balanced scoring, and they could spread out their offensive talent and have like a really dangerous third line, kind of like a team like St. Louis, where on any given night your top three lines could be your best line. This year we haven't seen that. You know, it's just, like you said, it's more than goaltending. It's just they can't generate the chances they have, and maybe it all comes around to they don't have a lot of confidence in the guy, so they're playing a bit more tentative. That's kind of, I mean, we've seen that in teams in the past. They just play differently when certain goalies are in net, but it really shouldn't matter.
Shouldn't translate to less than two goals a game
exactly.
For 2 months, right?
They've been the worst team in the NHL since December 3rd.
In every category,
I
mean, you look at their 30th, yeah. And not, I mean,
their record, goals, it's
I think yeah. The Canadians have got 9 points, I think, since December 1st or whatever it is, and the second worst team has 18, you know? Yeah. Like, if they'd even been the second worst team over that stretch, they'd still comfortably be in a playoff spot, but they're in a fight for their lives now.
So what do they do, right? The hot idea is you can Michel Therrien. You give him his walking papers. Do you make a big trade? Because Carey Price is not walking through that door for at least another month. Do you make a trade before the trade deadline? Do you chalk this up to do you just say already at this point it's a lost season, you can't make it any worse by handing away draft picks? What do you do?
I would say, what don't you do? And what it seems like Marc Bergevin is not going to do is, number one, he seems to be following the lead of one of the guys he used to work with, Bob Murray, who did not fire Bruce Boudreau through all of this, all the Ducks scuffling this year. He's adamant that he's not going to fire Michel Therrien, and that they still, you know, have a shared vision for the team, and he thinks he's the right guy. And you don't go get a rental, which is essentially what he indicated in his press conference the other day, was that, well, you know, the last couple of years they've gone out and got Thomas Vanek, Jeff Petrie, who they extended to a long-term deal. But I think the move for Montreal, if something happens on the transaction front, would be more in the you know, the type of move like bringing in a Drouin, something that where you've got a young guy who could be a piece for a while, because in terms of what they're going to do this year, even if they go out and get a rental, let's just say Eric Staal, who now plays for a team who I think has more points than Montreal, I just don't see that happening. I think everything the Canadians do now has got to be with the future, or, you know, at least something beyond this season in mind.
And if you look at the standings, like, as terrible as they've been, they're only 3 points out of a playoff spot heading into the weekend.
They had that incredible start, right? They've just been resting on that incredible start.
And if they can somehow just stay afloat, they'll have to improve significantly in order to stay afloat. Otherwise, they're going to just keep falling in the standings. But if they can just stay afloat and be within, you know, reaching distance of a wild card spot, when Price comes back, if he's healthy, it all changes.
Oh, it's perfect, right? I mean, he comes back mid-February, gets into shape for a couple of weeks, and then, you know, hits his groove in March and is ready to roll in April, right? Yeah, that's the ideal scenario for Montreal.
Ideal. But, you know, we see all the time teams, you know, they can go on a 5-6 game win streak. Easier said than done, but it changes everything. The standings are so close. There's a couple teams way ahead of the pack and a handful of teams that have no shot at the playoffs, but Montreal's in that middle ground.
The 80% mushy middle, yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, it's right there. So I don't know that you have to do anything. I don't know that you have to make any type of panic move. That would probably be the worst thing to do in this situation. And if you're going to get a rental type of player to fortify your offense, or maybe to, you know, to find a bit of help in the crease, you don't give up any key assets. You don't give up a legit prospect. You give up like a fifth or sixth round pick for an expiring contract or something like that. You don't make any knee-jerk reaction moves here. You just kind of have to, you know, the players on that team just kind of have to hit the reset button and stay afloat. And then when Price comes back, naturally things should get better. Right?
They can't get any worse.
They can't really get worse.
Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Ben Ennis alongside Ryan Dixon and Mike Johnson. We mentioned how great a start to the season it was for Montreal. It was so long ago, you forget almost. But now they are on the outside of the playoff picture looking in. And that means, and for a time there were zero, but right now there is one Canadian team currently in a playoff spot. It's the Vancouver Canucks, who are in third in that rancid Pacific Division, which used to be the cream of the crop in the NHL, but it's funny how things cycle through. So that division's lousy. The Canucks are like in this middle ground as far as rebuilding or competing. Right now they're competing because they're in a playoff spot. But what does that mean? Like, are there any grandiose conclusions to take out of one Canadian team in the playoffs? And if you were evaluating all seven Canadian teams, who's had the best season? Because there's only one in the playoffs right now. Like, is it almost a no-brainer to say it's the Maple Leafs?
Yeah, the Canadian team whose season is going exactly according to plan is the Leafs. There's no two ways about it. I would say Edmonton, Calgary, Vancouver all made the playoffs. Winnipeg, Calgary, Vancouver all made the playoffs last year. And I think you can safely say expected to be back this year. Right now, it would surprise no one if none of those teams made it. I mean, Winnipeg, Calgary for sure are in tough at this point. We'll see what happens with Vancouver. Edmonton, if Connor McDavid hadn't gotten hurt, maybe you could make a case for them, but that was clearly a twist that they did not want. And then, Ottawa can't keep the puck out of its own net. Recently, we touched on the Canadiens. It's far and away the Maple Leafs when you, just in the context of, hey, how are things going here now that we're almost at the All-Star break? I think, you know, if you were catching the Leafs at an honest moment, they'd be like, you know what? We're competing hard and we're not winning that much. It's perfect.
Yeah. In terms of the Canucks, they are on a bit of a hot streak right now, but I think them being the only team in a playoff spot, all that speaks to is, like you mentioned, how terrible their division is. They're tied for second in points in their division, in the Pacific, and they wouldn't be in a playoff spot in the Eastern Conference. Yeah. Like, it's just right now because they're in a weak division.
Yeah, the two wild card teams, Minnesota and Colorado, both have more points than Vancouver and San Jose, for that matter.
Yeah, and in the East, Boston and New Jersey, the two current wild card teams, have two more points than them. You know, and Vancouver's a funny team too, because you look at they're in that no man's land in the season and looking at it long term too, because like they don't have too many prime prospects coming up. Their Ryan Miller, he's getting up there in age. He's not performing the way he used to perform.
If only they had young goalies they could have held on to.
Vancouver's a weird team. I agree. It's just
one of those teams. And even when they started making those moves, they made a few trades. They signed Ryan Miller.
Radim Verbata.
Yeah, I mean, that one kind of worked okay. He plays well with the Sedins and everything.
It worked okay, but you're just wondering. Plays well but you just wonder what the mission
exactly,
statement
there
is
were,
there.
Just odd. They were just odd moves. They were just like, why are you signing these kind of veteran players when that's not
sort of
really,
contradictory things?
Yeah, you're not really a contender at the moment. So, but these are the types of players a contending team would add. It would be like that one piece to add.
I just think more than ever, possibly with the exception of the local team, teams expect to be able to retool and compete. There's just like I do think we in the media are quick to sort of point to the seemingly logical strategy of, well, if you need really good players, there's kind of only sort of one spot to get them, and it's in the draft. But you know, the lottery has changed further so that, you know, there's no assurances in terms of where you will draft. And you know what? We always talk about, oh, well, you can't get young players any other way. Well, that's not really true. Tyler Seguin has been traded. Ryan Johansson has been traded. Dougie Hamilton has been traded. Evander Kane has been traded. Tons of really good young players have been on the move. Jonathan Drouin's going to be traded soon. Steven Stamkos might become a free agent this summer. So, you know, maybe teams just don't have that mentality.
It's interesting when you mention all those names that have been moved. It's true. And Steven Stamkos, I still think Stamkos is kind of the outlier, right? Like, that doesn't happen. Guys
at
26 become free agents. But
that's
the trade route, for all that we talked about, the trade market being slow earlier this season picked up, and with all the talk of being unable to make trades because of the salary cap, you're right. Some big names have moved. Before we move on and take the break here, quickly on the Maple Leafs, because there's not a whole lot of intrigue around this Maple Leafs team. We know what they're doing, and we just gave them credit. I mean, everybody's giving them credit. I don't know if there's ever been more credit given to, like, a 28th place team in the history of the NHL. But let's also give credit to James Reimer, because the guy leads the NHL in save percentage. He's a free agent this offseason. We talked about some teams needing some goaltending right now. Like, is there a fit for James Reimer? Because Maple Leafs, I imagine everybody's going to be on the block that's not, you know, that's not bolted down, and save for, like, Morgan Riley, the real young promising players. Is there a fit for James Reimer, Mike?
I think there is, and I think the team is called the Toronto Maple Leafs.
No.
Going forward, you're going to need a good goaltending. Right now, James Reimer is a good goaltender, and if you need a foundation. You know, most good teams, they've got good goaltending. It's a key ingredient good teams.
As much as it's been devalued by stat heads a bit, at the end of the day, you don't need good goaltending until you really need good goaltending. You know, still the one thing that you're going to go, oh, my God, the goaltending's killing
us. If you have an average lineup, and with a good goaltender, you can be a playoff team and make a run. If you have an average lineup with very poor goaltending, you're not making the playoffs. You might even be a lottery team. And so, it's surprising that James Reimer's contract situation hasn't been the top storyline with the Leafs this season. It's more about their draft position, improving long-term, what to do with guys like Nylander and the young prospects. But, you know, either he's going to be traded at the deadline, you'd have to think, and you'd ideally get a significant piece, or at least
I don't think you're getting a third rounder,
which is better
than
nothing.
For the Leafs, right? They're stockpiling.
But they already have a goalie on the books for $4.5 million in 2016-2017. You can't have two.
You can't.
I just look at the gruesome goaltending Calgary has received, and it's probably too late for the Flames now, but if Reimer didn't go through the injury troubles that he did this year, like if we can rewind to December 1st and he's completely healthy and Calgary is looking at Ramo and Hiller and going, ooh, this isn't going to get it done, that might have been an easy swap to make there just to with not a long-term commitment, right?
I'm not sure Calgary's done either in that Pacific Division.
Yeah, then maybe they should still make the call.
Yeah.
I just think you could even look at a team like the Minnesota Wild, and now that, you know, they – for a while, their goaltending situation was up in the air. They had a bunch of injuries. They would rotate through guys. And they finally got Dubnyk, who was playing very well, and they locked him up. And they have a piece. Now, he's not maybe a top five goalie in the league, but he's a goalie that you can rely on. And I think this season, James Reimer's really proving that he's a goalie you can rely on.
When he's healthy.
When he's healthy. Why not give him another contract if he wants to stay here?
No one's going to blame that guy at this point. No, he's like, you know what? I think I'll take a crack somewhere else.
That's another good point. Is he's kind of been treated poorly relative to other goaltenders around the league. But you sign him for a bit, and you know, a team like Dallas, they've got two goalies making significant salary. They're doing well. Their goaltending recently hasn't been doing well. But you can manage a team. You can manage a salary cap having two goalies with a decent cap hit. And on the flip side, who do you have? You have Bernier, who hasn't played well at all this year.
No.
Reimer's a better option clearly this season, and it looks like maybe going forward the next few years.
And that who knows what, you know, Garrett Sparks might be something.
Exactly, he might be something, but right now you have a somewhat proven commodity in James Reimer. Why not give him a chance for a few more years as you can continue to rebuild?
It's definitely going to set up to be a real interesting February. When we come back, we're going to switch gears a little bit, because the Raptors are kind of an unheralded team in the city of Toronto, because they're second place in the Eastern Conference. They're just three games back of the Cleveland Cavaliers. They've beaten all the good teams in the NBA, and still nobody wants to give them their due. We will attempt to do so for at least a couple of minutes coming up next. It's Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Ben Ennis alongside Ryan Dixon and Mike Johnson on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
With a taste of what's inside the current issue of Sportsnet Magazine, here's Jordan Heath Rawlings.
Sometime on Sunday, during the NFC Championship game, the Arizona Cardinals are going to find themselves in a tough spot against a great Carolina Panthers defense. They might be facing third and long, or it might be fourth down and the game on the line. Whatever happens, they will be desperate. And they will do what they've done for a dozen years now when they're desperate. They'll call on Larry Fitzgerald and feel pretty good about their chances. As last week's dramatic overtime touchdown reminded us, Fitzgerald is still among the most dynamic players in the game. But 75-yard catches and game-winning shovel passes aren't what really make him special. No, Fitzgerald's career is an ode to the quiet beauty of the simple first down catch. Nothing fancy, nothing wild, just perfect route running, the most reliable set of hands in the league, and 10 yards or more every single time. In this month's edition of The Play, we go inside just one of those simple but brilliant receptions, a masterclass in football IQ and field vision taught by an all-time great. It only takes 11 seconds to appreciate how, even after a dozen seasons, a wideout who's never been the biggest, the strongest, or the fastest can dominate his sport just by doing everything simply, perfectly, exactly right.
That story and more can be found in the latest issue of Sportsnet Magazine. Available on Texture by Next Issue or by downloading the Sportsnet Magazine app for Apple, Android, and Windows tablets and phones. Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Absolutely free.
Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Ben Ennis alongside Mike Johnson and Ryan Dixon. Toronto Raptors are on quite a nice little roll, seven straight. Part of those wins came on the road. Long five-game road trip. That's not the longest road trip you can have, obviously, but the road trip wrapped up in London, England. They won that game, one at home against the Miami Heat. The Heat certainly shorthanded, but they did have Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh in the lineup. Raptors now second in the Eastern Conference alone, three games back of the Cleveland Cavaliers, but I feel like people, and you know what, maybe this isn't even true outside of the city of Toronto, that they're not getting their due, because it seems like the NBA as a whole, and you hear the ESPN broadcast, the Raptors and Miami Heat game, lots of credit being given to the Raptors, and Kyle Lowry, a starter for the Eastern Conference All-Stars, DeMar DeRozan having a career year. But here in this city, maybe we've become a little bit jaded here, Ryan, and maybe that comes with being a playoff team and not having any success in the playoffs.
Yeah, the Raptors are clearly at that point where they at least have to win a playoff series, maybe two, to really legitimize things. It's really tough. You know, we were just talking off air about the phenomenon in English soccer of cheering for a whole team your whole life that has positively no chance to win, right? There are just those teams that are always fighting the relegation battle. They're never going to go above, you know, the top 10 in the Premiership, but people are devoted to them their whole career or their whole life. The thing with Toronto and in basketball is the reason that it's easy to overlook, or sometimes too easy to overlook, the fact that the Raptors are a quality team is because you look at Golden State and San Antonio and think, if Toronto played 10 best of seven series against those teams,
yeah,
realistically, they lose 10 out of 10, right? Yeah. We're wired as North American sports fans, and for the most part, sports fans around the globe, to get invested because somehow, some way, sometime, it's going to pay off and your team's going to win it. So if you're a Kansas City Royal fan, man, it's been bleak for three decades, but they won, you know? And I think the fact that as quality as the Raptors are, that in this very moment, it just, there's essentially no chance they could win the NBA title. That's why you think, well, do they need to do something different, you know? But I thought Michael Grange wrote a really interesting piece recently on Sportsnet.ca about, hey, don't forget, you kind of have to redefine your definition of success to put it in NBA parameters, because only a handful of teams have won the title the past, we're talking decades, right? So the fact that you can go watch a team that is second in its conference, second to a team with the guy who's still maybe the best player on planet Earth, Cleveland, and LeBron James, don't just thumb your nose at this, because it is really a quality team and it has been improving, and maybe there is a way still for it to get to where it would ideally like to go without this sort of idealistic teardown approach. It's tricky.
It is tricky.
I think, looking at the big picture is one thing, and recent playoff success. But if I'm a Raptors fan, I'm cautiously optimistic about this team. But, you know, the skeptic in me looks at their current win streak and looks at the combined record of the teams they're beating, which is well below 500. So, yes, they're winning the games and good.
The Sixers have a lot to do with that, though.
That is true. But and even going back to last season in the regular season, they got off to a great start, but the second half of the year, they were a below 500 team. You know, the Raptors have proven they can go on stretches like this, but they haven't necessarily been able to keep it up for 82 games. So that's why a lot of Raptor fans, I feel, are just a little tentative to say, you know, this is the year we make a deep playoff run, not only because they haven't seen it in the playoffs, but because going back to last year, they kind of fell apart in the regular season as well.
Right.
You know, so you look at Friday's game, really impressive. DeMar DeRozan was great. You know, Valanciunas had a bunch of blocks and rebounds, and they're, you know, they played well, and they're doing well without a guy like Damari Carroll. When he comes back, it can only strengthen your team, right? So there's a bunch of positives to take from this, but it's and the fact they're second in the East, you can't take that away from them. Like, you really can't. But just you got to be a little hesitant to say this is the year they're going to make a deep run. That's just that's how I feel.
You think make the East final, don't you think?
Oh yeah,
I think people thought that. Last year,
they did, but there was I think it's different, though. I mean, last year they really came on. They were the Montreal Canadiens of the NBA last year. Like, they came out and crushed it for 2 months, and then it was like, well,
and then
it all went sideways for the end, and then it ended in, you know,
they were different. They were a different team in the playoffs. And this year, they are built more. They're the type of team that's built more for a deep playoff run. They're much better defensively.
Much better.
Much better.
Different way.
They're a really good free throw shooting team this year, and they get to the line. That's super positive. You need that. It's the difference in so many playoff games, and they are putting those little pieces together. And you can't take that away from
them. If they can get to the East Final, they're going to face a team probably that just fired its coaches. Clearly, you know, they don't know what's going on. They can't even get on the right page.
Yeah, I got them at a minute and a half before we got to take a break. Let's touch on that a little bit. David Blatt axed in Cleveland as the head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers and former NBAer Tyronn Lue taking over there. That team is in first place in the Eastern Conference, 30-11. They've lost twice now to the Golden State Warriors, most recently getting blasted by 30-plus. They were never in that one. But it's a scenario I can't even think of one. Is there a parallel in the NHL?
Lou Lamoriello axed Robbie Fatorik, I want to say, one year when the Devils were in first place with like 8 games left.
Yeah.
And I think Larry Robinson took over and they won the Stanley Cup. Yeah. So there you go.
Yeah, it proved to be the right move. And time will tell with the Cavs. My question is, the first thing, you know, that came to mind is, okay, well, now Dwayne Casey's got to be the all-star coach for the East, right?
Yeah.
But I guess that might not happen because it's just automatically goes to the first place team.
Yeah.
So Tyronn Lue as the Eastern Conference all-star coach?
Yeah. Is
that, and the game's in Toronto? That doesn't sit well with me, man.
Yeah.
Start a petition or something.
Oh, we got to have the NBA equivalent of the John Scott all-star controversy.
Yeah, referendum, anyone?
No? Yeah, maybe not. It would have been cool to see Bismack Biyombo an all-star. We started that too late, though, too, yeah. See if he can get a million all-star votes, end up in the starting five. But as it stands, Kyle Lowry going to be the starting point guard, and I'd be shocked if DeMar DeRozan isn't in there as well. When we come back, it is championship weekend in the NFL. Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, one more time, probably the last time. In fact, I'd be shocked if it ever happened again. But you never know, because Peyton Manning says he wants to continue playing, or at least those are the indications we get past this season. Also, we'll get into a little Blue Jays talk. And the DH in the National League, is this something we want to see? It's coming up next. Sportsnet Magazine Live, I'm Ben Ennis alongside Ryan Dixon and Mike Johnson on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Go ahead, lounge around in bed with a good magazine. We'll even read it to you. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Ennis alongside Mike Johnson and Ryan Dixon coming up in a few minutes before we sign off here at the top of the next hour. We'll get into the Blue Jays and Aaron Sanchez to the rotation. At least that's where he wants to be. Don't know if he's been explicitly told that, but that's the way he's preparing. And Marcus Stroman wanting to be the ace for a long time for this Blue Jays team. And Munenori Kawasaki out the door as well. And maybe DH in the National League. All those topics coming up during this hour, but we start in the NFL, gents. Just 3 games remain. Championship weekend on Sunday, and then a week off, and then the Super Bowl. Let's take it game by game, because there's only 2. But once again, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, in a playoff game. Patriots go to Denver, where it looked like, really all season long, the Patriots were going to be the one seed in the AFC, certainly losing 2 games down the stretch, 1 to the Jets and 1 to a horrible Dolphins team, doesn't help. I don't know how interested they were in winning those games, but this game is the result of that. It's in Denver instead of New England. Peyton Manning didn't look like vintage Peyton Manning last week, but they got it done somehow, Mike, against the Steelers. I think that's the biggest takeaway for most people from that game is that, hey, the Steelers, by all accounts, and you know, the eye test, should have won that game. Looked like they were in total control of it. But here we are, the Denver Broncos in the AFC Championship game. Peyton Manning, though, hasn't looked like Peyton Manning all season, and he hasn't done anything to limit those fears here going into this game.
No, that's true. He's a shadow of his former self. It doesn't mean he can't have a good game, right? Also, you can't pin it all on the quarterbacks in Denver. Like, their offense has struggled for the vast majority of the season, but guys like Demaryius Thomas, one of the best wide receivers in the NFL, he's been dropping passes all year. He did last week.
And they dropped a bunch of passes in that game.
Yeah, I mean, and they're easy passes. It's not like they're bad throws and he's
having trouble.
Well,
yeah, they're not coming in hot from Manning.
No, exactly. You know, he'll get the odd duck that he throws up there, but for the most part, the receivers on Denver, outside of Emmanuel Sanders, who has been pretty strong and reliable, you know, they've dropped passes all year, and they can't afford to do that against the New England Patriots. But I find it, like, this Brady Manning, it's 17th installment, something like that. This time around, it just doesn't have the same allure, you know? Like, it just does, like, Manning, it's because Manning's not, the season he's had, the way last week went, you know, Tom Brady has been very strong all year, and Peyton Manning has been very average to below average all year. And last week, Brady had a great game, and Manning was average to below average, you know? And so it's weird when I almost don't even lump this in with their previous games. Like, it's a weird
outlier. You almost don't fault Peyton Manning if he underperforms and they lose this game, right? There's almost no pressure on Peyton Manning,
well,
I feel, in this
game.
It
doesn't feel like your typical, in the past, especially when Manning was on the Colts, it was like, which quarterback is going to lead their team to victory? It doesn't feel like that this time around.
Can the Broncos lead Manning to victory?
Right. Basically. I mean, and the Denver Broncos, their defense, they really do have a Super Bowl caliber defense. They have an outstanding defense, and their pass rush is outstanding. And in recent weeks, you know, the Patriots struggled going down the stretch. You can question whether or not they were fully committed in all of those games because they had their division locked up. But they've really struggled to protect Tom Brady in recent weeks. And when you have guys like Von Miller attacking every play and his spin move off the edge, you have DeMarcus Ware, that defensive line and their blitzing linebackers gives opposing teams, you know, tons of trouble. And when you combine that with what the Patriots have been struggling with in recent weeks, it's a bad recipe. You know, Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, they're going to find ways to dump the ball out of the backfield to their running backs, short passes to Julian Edelman. To me, the one key to this game will be Julian Edelman. If he can have success the way he did last week, it's the Patriots, I feel, will run away with this game. But to pin this all on Brady versus Manning, it doesn't feel like it has in past years.
That's right. It's not, it's a little misleading to hype it that way, isn't it? But you know what? Maybe it's just, especially at this stage, and we all know what Manning's been through. I mean, he needs this help, right? He needs this, and he kind of needs to change up the formula, because all the years that we saw it being, you know, Manning leads offensive juggernaut deep into playoffs, it worked once. The rest of the times it
right.
didn't. So, you know, maybe changing the template isn't the worst thing in the world.
I feel like you were listening to the show last week, because we went on for about 20 minutes. Jordan Heath Rawlings, Arden Zwelling, and myself. Those guys were big Manning defenders, talking about how his legacy will not be defined by what he did in the playoffs or didn't do, right? Because he won a Super Bowl against Rex Grossman.
Yeah.
There's how many Super Bowls should they have won?
Well, there's no, I don't think there's an athlete in North American sports who is as maligned but still has a championship, you know? Like, usually when you get one, you're validated forever. But the way they were so close so many times that it's almost like Manning is John Elway at the end of his career, except Manning is wearing a ring and Elway wasn't, right? So I don't know. I feel like in this, the way we think about sports has shifted so much that, yeah, if Peyton Manning had played from 75 to 1990, he would be disparaged more because, you know, having the tag of regular season guy. Whereas now I think we do appreciate, well, you got to win 13, you know, if you go 13-3, 10 years in a row, you deserve more credit than you might have previously gotten, even if in what becomes sort of, to some degree, luck of the draw sometimes in the playoffs. I mean, he lost some wonky games too, right?
Yeah, he also had some bad games.
He did. So. It's true. I mean, the numbers are not pretty, right? Or they're certainly not what they are
No.
When he was putting up big numbers in the regular season and shredding some bad teams.
The one concern I would have about this game in just already anointing the New England Patriots AFC champions is that, well, we're talking about already anointing the New England Patriots AFC champions, and usually when everybody's so one-sided and it seems so obvious, things aren't nearly as obvious. I mean, you go back to last week and Packers, we all expected them to get annihilated in Arizona, and certainly there were some circumstances there that were bizarre, but that game went to overtime. What if Peyton Manning somehow comes up with a game of his life, game of his year, because he hasn't had many quality games this year. Remember, he was the worst quarterback, had the most turnovers in the NFL when he was benched and then subsequently injured. What if he comes up with one of his all-time greatest performances and somehow the Denver Broncos knock off the New England Patriots and somehow win in 2 weeks in San Francisco, winning a Super Bowl? That is, and we're going to talk about the storylines, the potential storylines for a Super Bowl. That could be the best one, right?
You can't argue that it would be an incredible storyline if Peyton Manning goes out on top. Final game, wins a Super Bowl and walks off into the sunset with, you know, a second championship ring on a second team. But I think it is completely unfair to just count out the Denver Broncos.
They already beat the Patriots once.
They beat the Patriots once. Earlier this season, they handed the Patriots their first loss. Granted, it was Brock Osweiler in that game. But I found interesting, the stat going around this week was this season at Mile High Stadium, Tom Brady threw more touchdown passes than Peyton Manning did. He threw the three in the one game he had there, and Peyton Manning, I believe, threw one at his home stadium all season, which is crazy. But Peyton Manning doesn't need to have the game of his life for the Broncos to win. You know, early in the week, I haven't checked the lines recently, but early in the week, the spread was only about 3 points with the Patriots being favored. You know, there's a lot more to this game, as I mentioned earlier, than a quarterback versus quarterback battle.
So
But when you have Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, that's all we're going to talk about.
That's going to be on the marquee.
That's the headlines. I get it. But when you really break it down, the nuts and bolts of the game, that's one. It's a key part, but it's just one of many parts. If you look at their history, they've played each other 16 times. Tom Brady has won 11 of those games, and Peyton Manning has won 5 of those games. They're 2-2 in the playoffs, though. And interestingly, when Peyton Manning went to the Denver Broncos, when Tom Brady teams play Peyton Manning teams, the Patriots are 3-1, but the home team wins every time.
Every time.
So the one game that Peyton Manning has started as a Bronco at home against the Patriots, he won. Mm-hmm. And I believe that was
AFC
possibly it was in the playoffs
when
years ago.
Yeah, it was when they went and got murdered by Seattle after.
Yeah, it was right before the first snap. Yeah. If you look at it at that point, from that perspective, and the fact that they won their home game against the Patriots in the regular season, you can't count out the Denver Broncos just because Peyton Manning hasn't been playing well.
Speaking of lines, if I set the betting line for the number of AFC championships we will see Belichick and Brady in the future at 2.5.
Over. I'm taking it over.
You're still going over?
Yes. I know what Tom Brady eats. Like he eats nothing but kale.
You think they'll go to 3 more AFC title games together?
I mean, who's the emerging powerhouse in the AFC right now, right? Like who's going to, I mean, the Steelers will be there and I don't know, do we believe the Ravens are bouncing back? The Bengals have shown nothing in the postseason. Yeah, I'd bet on them getting there 3 more times.
You know, one thing I find really frustrating about the Patriots is, like, I'm not a Patriots fan. I got a few buddies that are big Patriots fans, and I'm not one of the people to just, you know, crap on the Patriots, but they're so good, they're boring. And I kind of don't.
You just told us in the last block you like it when teams, we want to see some dynasties, you know? You're sick of parody.
I know.
Maybe that was off air.
It was off air. But, like, they're just. And another thing that frustrates me about the Patriots, it's the effect they have on the teams they're playing. The teams they're playing make more mental mistakes against the New England Patriots than they will against any other team. Like when the Chiefs last week, their clock management at the end of
the game. Yeah, but that's Andy Reid. Like, that's the history of Andy Reid.
But it happens in the regular season as well. Like,
And maybe it just looks that way because the Patriots don't make those mistakes.
It could be that.
A stark contrast.
But there are teams that will play smart against other teams, and maybe because every Patriots game is kind of, you're playing the New England Patriots,
right,
and there's this extra spotlight on Patriot games, and some teams can't handle that. But I feel like it's just little mental errors like clock management or like drop pass or just like bad play calls or questionable play calls at certain points of the game. Maybe it's just me looking at the Patriots thinking, man, they're so good, and you try to find holes in their game. So I'm nitpicking a little bit, but I feel like a lot of teams get almost overwhelmed by the fact they're playing the Patriots. And they make mental errors.
I think we'll miss that presence when they're eventually gone after apparently more than three AFC champs. But I think we will. I typically default to I like it when every team can have a chance. But I have to say it's been pretty crazy having this towering franchise in the NFL for now. When did they beat the Rams? 2000, 2001, something like that. Like, it's 15 years. It's crazy. Like, they wake up in the title game.
It's true. Yeah, and although it wasn't that long ago, we were talking about them being done when they were blown out by the Kansas City Chiefs in week four of last season.
That was amazing.
Tom Brady, is he done?
Cincinnati. Yeah. On to Cincinnati.
Since then,
to Cincinnati.
All they've done is win a Super Bowl and a win away from appearing in yet another. It's Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Ennis, Ryan Dixon, Mike Johnson. Let's look at the NFC Championship game, because maybe there's the emerging powerhouse in Carolina with the Panthers, because this is not their first playoff appearance. They were a playoff team at 7-9. I get it. They were not good when they appeared in the playoffs last. But this year, they're very good. And Cam Newton is a legit star. He's going to be the MVP of the league offensively. And they get a Cardinals team that, going into the playoffs, I would have told you was my favorite to win the Super Bowl. But I think I learned a little bit last week when I saw Carson Palmer's performance. Because that looked like a dude who'd never won a playoff game. That looked like a dude who was a little tight, let's say.
But now he has, and I do kind of wonder if it's one of those situations where he had to, it is the old monkey off the back a little bit, and I wonder now if he will. That's my in-depth analysis. He'll feel better. But I do think there's something to that he was, and this isn't like, usually we're talking about these guys in the context of Andy Dalton, like early in their career kind of thing. I mean, Carson Palmer's been around so long, it had to be some kind of mental block to have reached he's in a conversation about retirement, basically, in that bracket, and we're still talking about him trying to win a playoff game. And I do wonder if now maybe he will relax. They go on the road, which, of course they'd prefer to be playing at home, but, there is that element of a little less pressure on the road. They're not the favorite. They can just go out there and do what they do. They got great receivers. I expect to see a better Carson Palmer this week than we saw last week.
I think that's fair to expect. The thing about the Cardinals, I feel that they're a more well-rounded team, and on defense, they're a bit more. Both teams have very strong defense, and both teams can put up points as well as anybody in the league. But I feel like the Cardinals' defense has been more consistent recently. They gave up two huge plays against Aaron Rodgers and the
Packers.
Don't
blitz on the Hail Mary.
Don't do that. Never do that. Like, definitely don't do that.
Yeah.
But like you said, the same way Palmer learned and had that experience of going through a difficult playoff win, they should be better for it this week. The thing with the Panthers, I find, and again, maybe it's just me, but I feel like they're they're being overlooked a little bit. Like they lost.
They've been overlooked all season.
Exactly. They lost once in the regular season. Mm-hmm. Going back to last year, you mentioned they were below 500, but towards the end of the year, they were on a really good win streak to get into the playoffs. They did win a playoff game last year before getting eliminated by the Seahawks, who were one play from winning another Super Bowl. You know, and this year without the star, everyone, myself included, wrote off this team when Kelvin Benjamin went out in the preseason. He was their star receiver. He is what kind of helped Cam Newton he's what helped open Greg Olsen. He helped the run game. He was that vertical threat, especially in the red zone, that was supposed to bring this offense together. And when he blew out his knee in training camp, I wrote them off. So everyone wrote them off.
Yeah.
And so it's pretty remarkable to watch what Cam Newton has done. And it's been Cam, a full credit to him, but it's not, they're not just riding his coattails. They have a really good defense.
Do you think now that they're down to the nitty gritty that Carolina will unleash Newton more as a runner?
We haven't seen that much.
No, that's right. So I'm kind of, you know, it's sort of like not a sustainable approach in the regular season. And you think with your long-term brain, we have to develop, you know, we can't have a quote unquote gimmicky kind of quarterback. And he's obviously shown that he's capable of doing some, you know, he's not a guy who's, you know, like we saw Robert Griffin for 1 year.
Yes.
But now that you're down to it, and it's only two games, like, I just kind of wonder if there's a huge temptation to be like, okay, we're going to throw these run plays in too just to mess with the other team more, because it's just so hard to stop, like, in when it just kind of jumps out and happens out of the blue, right?
Well, it's the best strategy. Like, it will. It'll if you draw up a couple designed run plays for Cam Newton in the first quarter, it's going to lead the Cardinals defense to pause.
They're on their heels
they have to respect what Cam Newton can do with his legs. And also, there's, you know, there's big winter storm in the States right now.
Yeah.
There's a lot of snow, and I don't believe it's expected to snow during the game, but cold conditions, lots of snow, the run game is going to be more important than it would potentially if it was really clear conditions. So you're right, the Panthers are better off running Cam Newton more. And, you know, at the end of the regular season, when they were still undefeated, they wanted that perfect record, but they still sat Cam Newton in the fourth quarter. If they had a lead, they would protect him. And you're right, I don't think they're going to do that as much in the playoffs. And if you're Cam Newton, you're in the midst of an MVP season, you want the Super Bowl as the ultimate cherry on top. You're going to lay your body out on the line.
Oh, for sure.
You have a whole offseason
to
recover.
That's right.
You know,
that's what I'm saying. You're down to it now. Like.
And he's a huge man.
He can run over people.
Exactly. Like, he's bigger than a lot of linebackers.
If I'm a DB seeing that guy come at me, I'm...
You're outsized.
I have pause.
You know, he's not afraid to put his body on the line, especially in the red zone. You know, his rushing touchdown stats are the best all time. I think he just tied or passed Steve Young this season. Like, he's the most unique quarterback in that sense that the NFL's ever seen. You know, when you think about the number of rushing touchdowns he has relative to how many games he's played, his stats are remarkable.
Is this the de facto Super Bowl, the NFC Championship game?
I don't think, nah, not with the Patriots. There's no way New England gets to the Super Bowl and we go, oh, they got no chance. Like, I just think if they beat Denver and get in there, no matter what the matchup is, New England's going to be, they might not be favored, but I don't think anyone's ever going to view Brady and Belichick in the Super Bowl as, you know, not being competitive.
No, you're right. And you, Ryan, you mentioned off air that every time it seems that the Patriots are in a Super Bowl, it's always this super exciting game that comes down to it. You look at last year, you look at their losses to the Giants, you know, their game winning field goal against the Rams. And it would be better for the NFL if the Patriots probably made it, you know, not that people aren't going to tune in to the Super Bowl because it's the Super Bowl.
It's the Super Bowl.
But really it would make for a better storyline, especially when you consider how the season started with Tom Brady Patriots versus Roger Goodell. I mentioned this off air as well. Like, no matter which team wins the Super Bowl, there's going to be a really good story attached to it.
Well, what's the best story?
It's got to be Manning. I think it has to be Peyton Manning.
Might not be the best game, though. Like, if the Denver Broncos somehow figure out a way to beat the Patriots 17-14 and go to San Francisco to play either Carolina or Arizona, the line's, like, almost double digits, isn't it?
You think?
It?
Yeah. Yeah.
It depends on how they end up beating
New England. That's right. If they actually come out and, like, if they hold them to 14 points and look really, really, really stiff on the D, yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when they won their first Super Bowl, their offense was nothing spectacular. They won because of their defense, you know?
Right.
And the Denver can absolutely do that. My preseason Super Bowl pick was the Arizona Cardinals. So
that's the best. So part of that's Mikey J storyline.
But also, Larry Fitzgerald. It's hard not to
kind of overlooked, right?
Guy.
Yeah,
And Carson Palmer as well. Like you mentioned, he hasn't had a lot of playoff success. He's also had a lot of setbacks with knee surgeries. And Bruce Arians is a likable coach, and their whole team. Like it's a well structured team. They really don't have many holes. And the fact that they've done this with losing two of their running backs, and this rookie David Johnson's coming in, and he might be, I would say he's the best running back currently in the playoffs. No disrespect to Jonathan Stewart on the Panthers. So the Cardinals, they've got, also Arizona's a place, they never win championships. Especially in football.
Right.
They made it to the Super Bowl a few years ago.
That was a great Super Bowl too, actually.
With Kurt Warner, exactly. And so it would be nice to see Arizona win. If the Panthers won, you can't deny they're the best team in football.
With an ascending superstar, right?
Exactly. Like, and that's Cam Newton, who has been the best player.
And that's where the New England-Carolina matchup would be pretty tantalizing, with the old guard who maybe isn't going anywhere and the new guy on the block who's going to be the MVP, with set against the backdrop of Roger Goodell potentially having to hand the Lombardi Trophy to Robert Kraft. Oh, man.
That's the other. Yeah, and it adds to the Patriot legacy. That moment, if it were to happen, Roger Goodell handing the Vince Lombardi Trophy and probably the game MVP as well to Tom Brady. I mean, that would just be meme central for internet users, right?
I mean, how quickly could somebody Photoshop Jordan's crying face into Roger Goodell, right?
Like they've already got that. Yeah. That's already done. They're just waiting to hit publish on the tweet.
Yes, and going back to as far as the Patriots playing in some entertaining Super Bowls, we've had a nice little run of entertaining Super Bowls. Let's take the game from 2 years ago, Seahawks pounding the Broncos 43-8. Let's take that one out of there. But Ravens... Niners with the power outage.
Yeah, big comeback for the Niners, almost pulled it out.
With the Patriots and Giants, the second edition. Yeah, there's been a lot of real good games the last decade or so in the Super Bowl, save for that one blowout a couple of years ago. So you'd imagine whoever ends up there, it's going to be a close game, going to be an entertaining one, one that we'll all be watching either way. But yeah, this weekend, a lot of storylines, both in the AFC and the NFC. When we come back, Blue Jays spring training actually less than a month away from starting up. Cranks up February 22nd in Dunedin, pitchers and catchers report. And the Blue Jays conducting their winter tour right now, where they go across the country, promote their players, promote the team. And that means we got some conversation from those players to talk about. Aaron Sanchez says he wants to be a starter. He hasn't been told one way or the other by the organization, but he's preparing like he's going to take the ball every fifth day. Is that the right move for the Blue Jays? How does that affect our evaluation of the Toronto Blue Jays in 2016? Also, it is generating a little bit of conversation, some momentum building as far as the National League adopting the designated hitter. We'll talk about those two items and plenty more coming up next. I'm Ben Annis, alongside Ryan Dixon, Mike Johnson at Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
With a taste of what's inside the current issue of Sportsnet Magazine, here's Arden Zwelling.
Our life Together is so precious. Together.
Late this past May, Nazem Kadri's cell phone rang. "Hi, Nazem," came a voice on the other end. "This is Mike Babcock." It was the first time they'd ever spoken to each other, and for the next 15 minutes, they had a frank, open discussion about Kadri's role with the Maple Leafs and the steps Babcock wanted him to take in this, his fourth full NHL season. Babcock told Kadri he expected him to be an elite player, that he expected him to train harder and lead by example, and that he expected Kadri to put all of the controversy and hostility that had plagued his disappointing 2014 season behind him.
I was like, yeah, totally. I mean, I was all for it. I think I've totally bought into the situation, what he's been preaching. And, you know, I think that's why he's shown me the support he has, because he understands that I'm trying, and you know, I'm giving him everything I have. And you know, even when things aren't going right, I'm still sticking with it. I'm still, you know, buying into the process and essentially, at the end of the day, doing what's best for the team.
From that point on, Kadri has been a different player. More competitive, more defensive-minded, and more focused on being a trustworthy, reliable teammate, both on and off the ice.
Being able to, you know, talk to, you know, Babs on a regular basis and be in his office and talk about how he wants me to do this and that in order for us to do this and that, win, it just kind of motivates you and be like, okay, you know, this guy believes in me, he trusts me, he's giving me all this responsibility. Like, I don't want to let him down and, you know, be a disappointment. So I'm going to do everything I can in order to do what he wants me to do.
That story and more can be found in the latest issue of Sportsnet magazine. Available on texture by next issue or by downloading the Sportsnet magazine app for Apple, Android, and Windows tablets and phones. This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Ennis alongside Ryan Dixon and Mike Johnston. So, don't look now. We're less than a month away from the start of spring training, pitchers and catchers at least. But then, you know, spring training lasts more than a month. So don't get too excited. Get excited, but not too excited. February 22nd, Blue Jays pitchers and catchers report to Dunedin, and their winter tour continues. And a bunch of Blue Jays were on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, over the last week or so. One of those Blue Jays was Aaron Sanchez, who has had a nice little career so far, as he's been a real good reliever. He's been the closer. He's had a couple little stints as a starter as well. And according to Mr. Sanchez, if it were up to him, and I'm not sure if it is, in fact, it's probably not, but he's going to go into spring training with the understanding, with the belief that he is a starting pitcher on this Blue Jays team, which changes the outlook a whole lot. And it makes it a little more palatable with the acquisition of Drew Storen. Does the way you look at this Blue Jays team change and your outlook for how many wins they can pick up and whether they can repeat as American League East Division champions change if Aaron Sanchez is a starter and not a reliever, Mike?
I don't know that it, you know, if you are trying to guess the number of wins they're going to get, if you just look at on paper, their starting pitching staff isn't going to be as strong as it was to finish the year because a little guy named David Price is no longer with them. But all goes well, they'll have Marcus Stroman for the entire season. You know, he's got, he wants to be the ace, and he's shown early in his career that he has, you know, he looks like he's going to be a pretty reliable, strong starter for the Jays for a few years. And like you said, the addition of Storen, who looks like he might even be the closer for the Jays, and that changes what they do with Osuna, and it changes how they, you know, the look of their bullpen. I don't think it's, you know, it's too early to say whether it's a good thing or bad thing. Apparently, he's putting on, he's already carbo loading for the extra innings he's going
to
get.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. I'm trying to be a starter.
You're going for 200 innings this year?
Exactly. I'm eating like it's, I'm going for 300 innings. but you know, I think it's fine. If you're a guy like Sanchez, that's your goal to be a starter. It sounds like he's doing what's necessary to assist in that, to make it a more realistic goal. That's fine. It's just all going to come down to how he performs in spring training. I think it's just too early to venture it. Yeah, they're worse off or they're better off because of it.
It's a micro macro conversation a bit, right? Like, there's no doubt that in the big picture, sure, anytime you can take a guy from the bullpen and make him a starter and presumably make him a, you know, whatever, 2-3 guy, maybe, who knows, that's good for the player, that's good for the team. It's just a matter of, for a team that wants to win the World Series next year, for a team that's trying to defend a division title, is it, you know, do they already have the pieces to get a workable rotation? And is that bullpen then, you know, does it become a lockdown bullpen with Storn, Osuna, if Sanchez is in there throwing smoke in whatever inning he comes in, you know, in the here and now, I don't know, maybe it does make more sense for them to have him in the bullpen.
Well, or you look at the rotation. Is it better with Stroman, Estrada, Dickey, Happ, and Sanchez? Or is Chavez a workable solution? Or is Drew Hutchison a workable solution as your fifth starter? Is the potential of an Aaron Sanchez for 30 starts more enticing than any of those guys? I would say yes.
Yeah, probably, because he has some stuff. I mean, it's tough to know with Hutchison, right? I still feel like it's a little early to write this guy off, and he should, you know, he's really shown some stuff at times in the past couple of years. But yes, I think in terms of the kind of pitcher you expect Sanchez could be, yes, that's a more enticing situation.
So you mentioned Marcus Stroman wants to be the ace, Mike. He's not only implied that, I think he's explicitly said, I want to be the ace of this staff. I want to start opening day for the next 5 to 10 years. I want to be the guy this team relies on to stop losing streaks, to start winning streaks, to continue winning streaks, and to eventually lead them to a World Series. We saw what kind of an impact he can have on this team right out of the gate. The guy missed almost the entire season, arrived in the fall, and was starting game 5 of the divisional series. He looked incredible. And the personality, at least on the surface, seems to be there. Certainly it doesn't matter if you got a big personality, but you can't back it up with your play on the field. But all the pieces appear to be there for this guy to, I mean, he's already seemingly a star in this city, but to be the ace of this franchise, of this team going forward in, frankly, the premier division in all of baseball.
Yeah, he's got the right attitude, I think. Like, he's the type of guy, he's the face of the franchise type player, especially just from the pitching staff perspective, you know. But his attitude and his play, his determination, coming back from an injury like his, the way he did, and how he performed in the postseason, and his enthusiasm, his drive to want to be the guy to put the pressure on my shoulders, let me carry this team because I think I'm ready to do that. That's really great to see for a young guy like Stroman. I think, you know, that's his goal, to be the ace, and right now he's carrying himself like that type of player. And the way he performed when he returned from his injury last year, and he's still young and still developing and still improving, ideally, he has, like you said, he has all the pieces. I'm a big fan of hearing him come out and say it. I want to be the starter.
I'm a big fan of following him on Snapchat.
Yeah, I have one of those Blackberries. I'm like an old guy with the Blackberry.
Yeah, you're the last guy.
Yeah, but no, like, he's the perfect guy on opening day or the home opener. Like,
he's got that. Yeah,
he's sure. The guy you want to see on. If you're a Jays fan and you have tickets to opening night, you want to see Stroman on the mound.
And it does get overlooked, I feel like, in all the chatter about the Jays, that they didn't have this guy last year,
no.
Right? Like, they really were dealt a huge blow in spring training when he got hurt. And when you think about the departure of Price. I mean, maybe it's not exactly a one for one, but having Stroman around presumably for the whole season, that's really going to move the needle for them.
Yeah, and he was outstanding in some late regular season starts against the Yankees, and I don't know if this can be overstated. He was the starter for the most important game of the year, Game 5 against the Texas Rangers in one of the greatest games we've seen around these parts in a long time. Anyone want to reminisce about the Munenori Kawasaki era? Because he is now officially gone, signing with the Chicago Cubs. Does anybody care? I feel like he does get a bit of a bad rap as the quote-unquote mascot. And maybe the acted, yeah, it was a little, it ran itself a little thin eventually with Blue Jays fans. But he was not a total nothing on the baseball field because people like to paint him with that paintbrush. He was a guy who could work a count, and for his limited natural ability, almost maximized it, could do some things defensively, play shortstop adequately, and like I said, take a walk, come up with the occasional base hit the other way. I'll miss him.
Yeah, I think most Jays fans will. Like, yeah, it became a little cartoonish at the end, and, you know, when they're celebrating their in the postseason with champagne everywhere, and he's in the
wants
ice
to go to
bath
a Bush party.
And he wants to just party it up, and it was great to see. Yeah, a little, you know, the fact that people refer to him as the Jays mascot kind of says a lot. But like you mentioned, he was useful in certain situations, and especially if you run into like injury problems throughout a season, he's a guy that you can plug in there, and you know, he can give you some respectable play. So the Jays might miss him in that context, and the fans are definitely going to miss him. Like, I wonder if it will have a significant impact, you know, in the clubhouse. Like,
no,
I probably can't imagine, not because there's so many other guys, and there already is a lot of personality on this team. You know, like Stroman, we mentioned
Josh Donaldson. Viking now. Yeah,
he's on. I don't watch that show either.
I've never even heard of it.
No, but he's braiding his hair and stuff. That's cool, right?
That. Yeah,
yeah. You probably see a lot of people around Toronto. You have the Josh Donaldson man bun. So
yes.
You know, in the summer, you have the Josh Donaldson Viking braid or whatever they do.
Does anybody have an opinion one way or the other on the designated hitter in the National League? Because I
sign me up. Sign me up.
I think most people feel that way. Or maybe am I oversimplifying it? And maybe not being in a National League city, it's hard to gauge that. But people talk about, oh, the great strategy of National League baseball, getting the pitcher to bunt and pinch hitting for him early in games. There's so many great pitching performances that could have been that are not in the National League because, you know, those offensive plate appearances are too important. It seems like the momentum is shifting. And I think injuries are a big part of it, too, because we've seen some significant pitcher injuries
That's
at the
true.
Plate.
No doubt. I guess I'm slightly slower to embrace it, but I understand it's time. I mean, just for continuity, right? It's just kind of crazy that it's been, 40 years that half the teams play under these circumstances and half play under, you know, you get into the World Series.
With interleague play.
Yeah, with interleague play now, I think it's clearly time to make it uniform. So I count me as one of those guys who kind of is in love with the idea of the strategy. But that said, it is deflating when you're watching a baseball game in the playoffs and, you know, a team's getting a rally going and you know, well, if the number eight guy, you know, if it gets to number nine, it's essentially a sure out, right? So it does take the wind out of the excitement a little bit sometimes.
And the same way, like, the NFL is changing its rules to protect its quarterbacks and you know, you don't want a star pitcher getting hit in the elbow with the ball and he's out for weeks or months.
It's not good
for the game. It's not good for the players. It's not good for the team. And as a whole, it's not good for the game, right?
Yeah.
Also, more home runs equals better baseball, right?
I think we all learned that
in
the 90s with whatever they were injecting themselves with.
Cork.
That was fun. It was fun to watch those games. No question about it. What it might also change is how many guys throw at people, because in the National League, you got to step up there. But if there's a DH in both leagues, I guess that's all gone. It'll be fun to actually watch baseball at least on a spring training level, in just over a month's time. Blue Jays pitchers and catchers reporting on February 22nd to Dunedin. Thanks, gents. That'll do it. Another edition of Sportsnet Magazine Live for Ryan Dixon and Mike Johnson. I'm Ben Ennis. This is the Sportsnet Radio Network.